The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 181. Excited to have John Mitchell with us. John is a senior strength coach with the Australian Institute of Sport. He's also a board member of the ASCA, and as most all of you know, I just got back from attending the ASCA event, spoke there, had a phenomenal time, just a great life experience being able to go to Brisbane and Sydney and Melbourne and go to the ASCA conference, which I've heard fantastic things through the years, and it more than lived up to it. Great event, great people, fantastic culture, and John being on the board is just a part of that. I wanted to get in, sit down with John and just talk to him a little bit about his background. You know, he has a background in rugby, but then he's working with rowing and some other sports at the AIS, and you know, they've done a fantastic job on a global stage. With the Olympics and World Championships and things along those lines, and he's just done a great job there. And so, wanted to have him on the show. We talk about, you know, rowing specifically. I think that's a topic, you know, a lot of coaches get stuck with rowing instead of maybe going into strength and conditioning to specifically work with rowing. So, I know there's a lot of you out there that are working with that sport that are unfamiliar. So, we talk quite a bit about that. Just talk about, you know, developing a culture and buy-in and all those things when you're a coach that, you know, you're working with a sport that maybe you're not so familiar with. So there's tons of great stuff here in this episode. I know you're going to enjoy it. Before we do, though, we want to make sure we recognize our sponsor for this episode, Sorinex. Sorinex, as you all know, I think the world of. I have their rack in my garage. You know, just a fantastic company through and through. And As you all know, it's Brovember. You know, we just got done with Squat October or Squattober. It's Brovember this month, you know, so it's time to work on our guns, our traps, and be able to sport the tank top here this month. And so I'd encourage you, if you have not already done so, go to their website, Sorinex.com, and pick up your shirt so you can show off your guns. Make sure you use the hashtag Brovember. And so we can all see what you got going on this month. But just creative people, great guys. If you're not watching some of the stuff they're doing on social media, you're missing out. You know, I just think the world of these guys. So make sure you check out Sorinex. Sit back and enjoy this episode with John. I know you're going to get a lot out of it. And we'll see you on the other side. Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. Super excited. I'm on site, the ASCA, fantastic conference. If you've not ever attended, you must attend. But I'm sitting with John Mitchell. He's the board director, he's a senior strength coach for the AIS, the Australian Institute of Sport, one of the premier organizations in the world, putting out fantastic information. And asking to sit down with us, man. I appreciate you being on the show.
Awesome. Great to be here, Ron. And it's a real pleasure to have you come over here to Australia and you know, talk about what you do and your journey and, you know, how we can improve strength and conditioning coaches here in Australia. So, you know, thanks for making the effort to come
absolutely. Here. This has been phenomenal. I've had a fantastic experience. It's truly a one-of-a-kind event. And I asked John to sit down. When I do these podcasts, you know, and just much like I talked about in my presentation, I'm always intrigued by journeys of strength coaches, and especially in different cultures and different parts of the world. And so, kind of what got you into strength and conditioning, and then what's kind of led you to your role at AIS?
Well, Ron, it's started as a boy. I was very, very keen on any sort of sport. So I was playing rugby league. I played rugby union. I played Australian football. played cricket, baseball, a whole heap of different sports. So I was always interested in sport, and I had a really good physical education teacher when I was in my younger grades at school, year 7, year 8, and he really influenced me, and I wanted to be a PE teacher. That was my dream, to be a PE teacher. So, kept going, and I became quite a good rugby league player, and I wasn't as good as I thought I was, but I got to some fairly good levels in playing rugby league. So that was part of my sporting journey. And then I was lucky enough to go on to university and study physical education, and I was still playing rugby league. And part of the rugby league journey was we had to learn to get stronger and be more powerful. And it was, showing my age now, the mid-80s when strength and conditioning just started to show its head in rugby league and within sport. So I got this interest in strength training, and I came from a similar background to you, very poor upbringing, that sort of thing, and just had my father passed away when I was only 9, and I had a good mate who his father bought him a gym, and it was in his backyard, so we'd go around there and we'd have Joe Widers, Flex magazines, and Muscle absolutely. And Fitness, and that's how I learned to train to start with. It was just going through these bodybuilding magazines and let's see how much we can lift and that sort of thing. So went to university, was doing PE, and because I'd got fairly big, and someone said the gym I started training, they said, "Oh, can you come and start being an instructor here? We know you're doing PE." So I started working in one of the fitness centres and was doing that, and then started teaching, was still playing rugby league, and the team I was playing rugby league with, I became their strength and conditioning coach. So teaching strength and conditioning and working in a fitness centre. And then I was involved with the Canberra Raiders as a player. So one of the big franchise rugby league teams here in Australia. And I stopped playing rugby league and got involved in coaching, and they brought me in as a coach to the Raiders, and I was working with the junior development groups coaching skills in rugby league, and they found out that I was also working in a fitness centre, I'd done PE, and they said, "Oh, can you start doing some strength stuff with these guys?" So I started getting to doing strength and conditioning, still teaching, still working in a fitness centre, and married at the time, and did that for a long, about 8 or 9 years. I was still teaching and working rugby league, and then I moved into doing some AFL stuff, and then I moved into working with some baseball and that. So pretty much my life was sport, and probably why my first marriage didn't go so well. So, and I finally got a full-time position in strength and conditioning in the start of 2000. So I got the head strength and conditioning coach at the ACT Academy of Sports. So working with the Canberra-based athletes that were working at a national level and also competing in state-based competitions. So I was lucky enough then to start working with some different sports, because I'd been so football dominant, rugby league dominant. And I started working with cycling and baseball were my two main sports to start with. And through that role at the ACT Academy of Sport, I worked with archery, with a lot of disabled athletes. Actually went away with the Australian figure skating team. I was the strength and conditioning coach with the Australian figure skating team. And just got a lot of different opportunities with different sports and working with a lot of different coaches that just gave me different insights into how to deal with different athletes and male and female athletes. Through that role at the ACT Academy of Sport, I started working with basketball, and I worked with the Canberra Capitals women's basketball. So that's how they play in the professional league within Australia, and I got to work with some really good basketball, Lauren Jackson, who was playing on the Seattle Storm there.
Oh yeah.
So some high quality athletes, but low levels of strength and conditioning experience. So working with them, and then I had an opportunity, one of the coaches with the Capitals got the job with the Chinese women's national team for the 2008 Beijing Olympics. And he said, "Hey John, do you want to come over and can you come and help me get these guys started in China. So that was a really different journey. I was doing some consultancy work. I was still full-time at the ACT Academy of Sport. So jumping over to China for a couple of weeks, working through an interpreter to teach these Chinese girls who hadn't done a lot of strength and conditioning work. They'd worked in army bases and put packs on and run up hills and all this sort of thing, and didn't drink water, didn't know how to eat. If they had their menstrual cycle, they couldn't train because it was their special week. And so that was a really, really cool little thing there. And around that same time, I started to do some stuff with the Australian Rugby Union with the Wallabies. So again, lots of stuff going on. I was all over the place. I can't remember what I was doing. But through the role, I worked with the Wallabies guys who were based in Canberra, and they went away to the 2007 World Cup for rugby. And on the back of that, there was a job came up in Australian rugby, and they asked me if I'd be interested in applying for that. So I moved out of the national or the state institute-based system with the ACT Academy of Sport into working with Rugby Union, and that primarily was working with the 15s rugby with developmental level athletes from 15 through to 21 years of age. And that was really enjoyable, and I ended up becoming the head of strength and conditioning for Australian Rugby Union with all their developmental programs. Part of that then the rugby sevens had just sort of taken off. Rugby sevens have been going for quite a while, and a lot of the time I wanted to move into the 15s, but rugby sevens came along, and I got sucked into this whole rugby sevens extravaganza that it is. And
it's an exciting game.
It was, and the first tournament I went to was 2009 World Cup in Dubai, and it was I'm going along. I was looking after the men and the women's team, running between two different teams, and really exciting. So moving along, I went straight into the men's sevens program and coordinated all that. It became a centralised program in Sydney, and for a year I was still living in Canberra. All my family was in Canberra. I was flying to Sydney on a Monday morning, flying home on a Friday.
I know that deal.
Yeah, so you've been there, you've walked the road.
That's
so
right.
It was a fantastic thing, and I miss the rugby sevens every day.
Right.
But for the health of me and my family, I decided at the end of 2014 that I needed to change, and I was fortunate enough a position come up at the Australian Institute of Sport.
And it's been there, yeah.
So started 2015 into Australian Institute of Sport, and I was working with rugby for 7 years, and then all of a sudden, bang, John, you've got the rowing program and you've got men's gymnastics. So
that's actually great, because I want to get into that, and that's a great lead-in. But before we do, I mean, you've had we're not getting any younger in this business. You and I both, and you've been in it for a long time. You can't go that long without making a ton of mistakes. But what's maybe the biggest mistake you've ever made, and kind of how you learn from it?
The biggest mistake I think I made was initially around when I was employing staff, and it was something you talked about yesterday, and you're trying to employ people that are like you, but then you're butting heads,
and it causes
a lot of issues within your organisation and how you deal with things. So I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes from a management point of view that I made. And I started to look at what are the needs of our organisation, and who do we need? We need someone who's got these skills to come in, not someone who's going to be like me. So that's from a management point of view. From a coaching point of view, I think one of the biggest mistakes I made was saying, well, something I did before doesn't apply now.
Right.
So you sort of, I did that before. I don't need to do that anymore. But so much now, a lot of stuff that I didn't think I needed, I need.
Sure.
And it's simple stuff that, and it works.
Right.
But you start chasing, Ron's doing overhead squats on a Swiss ball, balancing a kettlebell on his nose. So, I should be doing that as well.
Right.
But I think, just trusting in what you do, and the old KISS principle, keep it simple. You've got to keep it simple. They're probably my biggest mistakes in terms of mistakes and breaking people or anything like that. Touch wood, I've been very lucky.
That's good.
I haven't made any of those mistakes yet, but there's just little things like, assuming that it's one thing when there's a whole heap of different things you can look at. You just can't say, well, that's the one reason that happened. That might be one reason, but there's so many other things you need to consider.
Well, I think the thing that you mentioned there, that in both of those examples, is maturity. As you mature as a manager and you learn more about yourself, and you're willing to know what your strengths and what your weaknesses are, and hire for your weaknesses. That's a sign of maturity. But also a sign of maturity is knowing that you don't have to overcoach. You can just come back and go, back to the regressions and to the basics and to the fundamentals, and make sure that you're working towards that. I'm glad you said that. You talked earlier, and this is always a great question for me, because I've always worked with American football. I played it, I coached it. I had 1 year, 2 years of not being with it, and that's it in my career. You've had a similar path with rugby. That was your passion growing up. Now you played lots of different sports, and since then you've gone through the gamut. We've worked with a lot of different things, but I think that's your passion. All of a sudden you're in a situation where you got gymnastics and you have rowing and sports that maybe you've never even done before you got there. How did you come into a setting like that as a strength coach and, create a program that is sport specific, that's individualize that and create that buy-in from those athletes when they're looking at you saying, you've probably never even been in a rowing boat?
Well, that's exactly right. So I remember one session we were doing with the rowers, and it was a really tough session. They were getting pretty beat up, and they had a few penalties that they had to do at the end, and I like to do wall sits. And one of them sitting doing his wall sits, and he was almost in tears, and he's going, what are we doing this for? This isn't for rowing, and you've never even been in a boat. I said, well, you've never put your head in the scrum, and it's about discipline. It's about training correctly. And I think that was one of the first things that I saw when I started working with gymnastics and rowing, is that they're very traditional sports.
Sure.
And their tradition means a lot, and this is the way we've trained in gymnastics. And I worked with two Russian coaches, or still do work with two Russian coaches, who are, this is how we trained in Russia.
Right.
This is what we did. We had success. This is what we do here.
That's what they want to replicate.
Yeah. Rowing, we went through a real change after 2012, where the belief system became that, to be better rowers, we have to row more.
Right.
And that makes sense, but rowing more meant they did less strength and power work. So, I came into an environment where, the rowing athletes I was working with, after the first 5 months I'd worked with them, they said, Johnny, we're really glad you come in. But, all the battles we had and the tears and things like that, they said, you've got to understand, we used to treat our weight session as a recovery session.
Right.
And it wasn't about getting stronger or more powerful. So, I think that was one of the things that I had to change initially, was the culture, and about the benefit of trying to be stronger and trying to break down some of the injuries that they were getting. So rowing was, very posterior chain dominant upper body, very quad dominant lower body. Gymnastics, very anterior body dominant. So the injuries they were getting were related to the imbalances that they were getting in their bodies. So trying to break down those cultural or traditions within their sport to change. So, can you do press-ups, you rowing boys? Oh, they're the ugliest press-ups I've ever seen. You can bench pull 110 kilos, but you can bench press 60 kilos.
Wow.
And, coming from an environment of rugby where you're bench pressing 140 kilos and you're bench pulling 110, so it was totally flip-flopped.
Completely opposite, yeah.
And then some of the stuff with the rowing, the weights they liked doing was circuit based.
Mm-hmm.
So very very aerobic, metabolic type circuits, which when you were trying to build strength and power, it doesn't really work. But I think looking at it now, it was good that I was able to listen and learn from the coaches and the athletes about, because I went was nearly a little bit blinkered. I think this is what I need to do. But as I said, I went in and I listened to what the coaches right. did and what the athletes did. And I said, well, I think this can work. This can be something we can do. And we came up with a blended method where, and you know, you can read any of the, you know, Kramer and Fleck
yeah.
manuals, and they'll say concurrent training doesn't work. And I was, you know, I was a sort of believer.
Sure.
Now after, you know, 18 months of working with rowing, you know, concurrent training works. If you've got athletes who are doing a lot of endurance work,
Agreed.
They need that strength stimulus, they need that power stimulus, but they still need that endurance metabolic hit in the gym
right.
from a mental toughness point of view.
Sure.
They've really got to have that there.
Well, you know, in the U.S., I mean, what happens in mostly, it's mostly a collegiate sport in the U.S., and only a few people work with our elite rowers in the country, but most coaches that end up in a college setting, they're there to work, you know, football or baseball or basketball, and what ends up happening is they get stuck with rowing as an additional sport where they have no familiarity. Kind of give kind of a basic preseason, off-season, you know, in-season kind of plan. All right, how many days a week are you lifting? Is there any conditioning outside of the boat? You know, kind of what are you doing with your athletes?
So typically, I mean, these athletes will be on the water two times a day.
Yeah.
So depending on what the coach does, they might do a morning and afternoon row. So you'll get them, you know, late morning to do their lift.
Yep.
If they're not doing two rows in a day, they're doing a row and then they might be doing an erg.
Yeah.
Or they might be doing a row and a bike, or they might be doing some other sort of bike row. They might
sure.
be, you know, 100K ride they've got to go on. So generally when I got them, every time they come into the gym, I would check off. We've got a check-in system where they record how much work they've done before they come in. And it was pretty rare to get one of these guys coming into me and they haven't done 150 minutes of work prior. So you can imagine what they're like, you know, come Friday,
yeah,
they come
into
me. They really don't want to be there. So, aside of whatever program you're doing as a coach, you got to give them some energy when they
sure.
come in. You got to get them going. Around their strength program, and it varied depending on the different crews you worked with and the different philosophies of the coach you worked with. But at my best athlete, she was doing four sessions a week. She was doing two strength power based sessions and she was doing two circuit based sessions. And typically the strength power sessions, the first thing I found out was they tolerate a lot more volume of work in the gym than any other athletes I've
right.
worked with, hands down. The first program I gave the rowers, a strength program, is one I typically use with rugby. I looked down and they said, "Is that all I'm doing, John?" I said, "What do you mean? That's a solid training program.
Yeah.
I do that program
yeah,
and
right.
it's hard." Like, look, just try it.
Right.
Let's go into it. So
they're
laughing at it. So they tried it and they got through it and they went, yeah, that wasn't too bad, but I did have to increase the volume of work that they did. But then the trick was to, you know, try and make sure they get through that work.
Sure.
In a time that's not going to cut into their lunch or it's not going to cut into their dinner and that sort of thing.
Right.
So again, you know, working on supersetting and, you know, getting good complexes working with your exercises
right.
that you want to use. So a typical, you know, strength power session for me, I believe in a conjugate model of training.
Yeah.
I like to be working on, you know, power and activation and strength and then some hypertrophy component within any program I do. So.
Right.
Typically, coming in on Monday, I might be doing some snatching, it might be power snatch, hang snatch, any sort of variation there, and then mixing that with a box jump or a bear crawl or something along those
yeah.
sort of lines. Then moving into a lower body strength, so if we're snatching, we might go into a squat.
Right.
And then with that squat activity, they might be working on some sort of shoulder rotational stuff before moving into bench pressing. And bench pressing was a massive thing. With the rowers, as I said, the upper back strength, great.
Yeah.
Push strength, we had a lot of initially rib stress injuries.
Wow.
And for me, the rib stress was all down to, well, you got these massive muscles in the back pulling, putting
yeah.
all this stress on your ribs. You haven't got any brakes in the front. So let's build some brakes, put some brakes on there so that you can exert more force. So we get our bench pressing activities going there. And then, end the session with an overhead press. Because
mm-hmm.
they didn't do any overhead press. And I'd say to them, well, why have you never done any overhead press? I mean, you're rowing 240 strokes down, that shoulder, it's working the whole time. Right. We need to have some good strength in those shoulders. So we'd finish with some shoulder stuff and maybe some hip stability, lower back components to superset in with that vertical pressing movement. And then, you know, depending on how the, you know, the time of year and that sort of thing, whether we'd put in an abs circuit on the back end or whether we'd superset the abs in between the sessions. And typically following, you know, I'm a big believer in prescribing the loads that my athletes need to lift. So, you know, looking at, you know, percentages of 1RMs that they work at with all their major lifts.
Right.
And I found, you know, the Jim Wendler model is a really good model to follow and really improves their strength. But then manipulating that to get that extra volume as well. So we'd be doing, you know, like a typical 5-3-1 over a 4-week boy. Yeah. But then on the back of, you know, the first set of fives, you can do your 85% lift. Well, then we're going to do two sets of 10 at 65% after that. Yeah. So increasing the volume that way of the work that they were doing.
Is there any focus on, you know, just because they're in a boat in one plane of movement for the most part? Was there any? Have you done anything with you know, just developing general athleticism?
Well, I think that's the key. You've got to have general athleticism. Sure. As I said, you know, we're doing bear crawls.
Right, I heard that.
You know, we're doing rotation movements with them. I'm doing a lot of split squat work with them. You know, lateral step-ups, right. Work like that, which is, you know, just building, you know, better athletes.
Right.
Not necessarily rowers, because, you know, they get in the boat, they row, I want to build a better athlete that's suited to get in that boat to be injury resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, over the course of, you know, 2,000 metres, 240 strokes, they're the one that's going to be, you know, standing up on top of that podium.
No doubt. You mentioned monitoring and having your athletes come in and obviously work, you know, you're getting, trying to get a good idea of the amount of work that they've done on the front end. Are you looking at any other variables? Are you looking at sleep? Are you looking at, you know, food consumption or anything along those lines to really kind of help educate the athlete? And how are you communicating that to them?
Yeah. Well, primarily, I mean, I'm very lucky in where I work at the AAS is we have, you know, we have nutritionists that work directly. We have a physiologist, we have a physiotherapist, we have a doctor, you have your sports coach and a psychologist. So I'm one of a multi.
Part of the team.
Yeah. It's a big team. So it's, overall, they'll do some monitoring where they'll look at, you know, their sleep, their, you know, they're feeling their well-being, you know, how much study and stuff they've had to do. So there's a lot of other parameters, but for me, when they come to me, I want to know, well, how are you looking when you come to me? So they might come to me at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, or they might come at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
What have you done before you got to me, and what's your nutrition like as well? Because if you've just done 150 minutes of work, and you come to me and you tell me you haven't had any fluids, you're not hydrated, you haven't had something to eat, well, what are you going to get out of my session?
Agreed.
So that's the sort of information I want to know. And in the morning, they might do their wellness scores and everything like that, but then they've been on the water for an hour and a half. They come to me and, you know, their back's tightened up and that sort of thing. That's not going to be on that morning report that I get from the physio on that, is
right.
it? So
right.
I need to get, you know, update that as they come to me and say, well, what's going on with you? You know, why is your back sore? What's happened? Have you done this? Have we released it?
Sure.
Can we activate it? Let's see how it goes with this training session.
I heard you say earlier that it's you're finding out if there's any challenges to them coming in and training that session. I thought that was really a great takeaway was, you know, when the athletes are walking in, is there anything? Dan John says, you know, can you go?
You know,
and that's kind of what you're doing with that quick diagnostic as they're walking in the room. Well, we got to get going to this gala tonight. It's a real big event here, and we're super excited about that. But before we do, we get into some general questions. What's the best piece of advice that you ever received, coaching advice?
Best bit of coaching advice was don't think about a green frog.
Don't think about a green frog?
Don't think about a green frog. So if you're coaching someone and you see something, you go, oh, don't do that, what's the first thing that's going to come into their head? If I say to you, don't think about a green frog.
You're going to think of a green frog?
You're thinking of a green frog. Yeah, your kid climbs up the tree and what do you say? Don't look down. What do they do? They look
first
down.
Thing.
So I think that was a great bit of advice I got was, you know, tell them what you want to see, not what you don't want to see.
Absolutely. Green frog. Yeah, that's great. I love that. What about a book, a website, and an app recommendation?
A book, I think one of the best books I read, it was probably 15, 16 years ago, and I come back to it. There's a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And I still use a lot of his stuff. People talk about sharpening the saw, sharpen the saw.
Right.
Synergize and work together with people. The third alternative, there's your way, my way, and then there's there's another way. So I think that's a really good model about how you deal with people, and us as strength and conditioning coaches, and a lot of people get caught in sets and reps. Is it 5 sets of 4 or 4 sets of 5?
Right.
It doesn't matter. You work with people, so you've got to know how to work with people. So I'd highly recommend that book.
Yeah, it's a great. Any websites or apps that you use?
Websites. This is going to tell a bad story about me when I was younger, but I like T Nation. There's a lot of different stuff out there. Some good stuff. There's bad stuff, but it brings back to me. I was saying before, there's stuff that I've forgotten about.
Sure.
I'll be on Twitter and T Nation, bang, will pop up and I used to do that. Why aren't I doing that anymore? So
forget more than you know. So, you forget what you know sometimes.
So that's I like to look at that. App wise, nothing great around the app. Apps that I have to use for work around the gym aware technology, so I'm using that all the time. Our monitoring system through SmartAware, so I'm on that all the time as well. I use a 1RM calculator that I picked up on there. So if I get stuck and I don't have stuff on it, work out a 1RM for someone. I've got the little app that I can use there. And then a spirit level is the other one that I like. So a spirit level to measure, spirit levels.
Your
thing, and you can measure angles. So if you look at the internal rotation, I can just stick my phone there and go, your internal rotation's better today than what it was last week or whatever.
So I didn't think about that. That's great.
So there's some good little tools there. It's hard. You get so swamped by all the stuff that's coming out these days.
So much daily.
It's incredible.
Well, John's going to be over in Nashville at the NSCA Coaches Conference. And so you guys get a chance to meet him there if you haven't already, but he's done fantastic things with ASCA and this conference, and appreciate you having me down and the entire organization for allowing me to come down and spend some time in the beautiful country, and what a great event. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and I appreciate everything.
No worries, Ron. Absolute pleasure.
Thanks,
and I look forward to seeing you guys. Come and say hello when I'm in Nashville. It would be great. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.